Good afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat. And today we're going to do something a little different. We're going somewhere a little, everybody thought about this before. Everybody contemplated this, what we're going to be talking about, writing a book. We're going to be talking about writing books today. And everybody I know about, everybody that I've talked to, and this is episode 244, I think, today. We're recording on the channel. Everybody I talked to, from business executive to CEOs, everybody dreamt about or talked to me about the possibility of them writing a book. Either they've written some or they're contemplating of writing a book. So today we are going to be addressing this topic. And my guest, Henry DeVry, thank you so much for joining me, Henry. I really appreciate it. And I can't wait to get to know you a little bit and get to know what you do and how do you help some of these professionals out there. Our channel is formed out of founders, executives, startups, professional in general. We cover close to 50 countries. This is where the professionals are. And we're engaging with them through the channel, through the podcast here. I really didn't know 3 years ago when I started this podcast channel where it's going to be now, covering 50 countries. We're averaging 2.5 million views on a weekly basis. It seems to be taken off. So they appreciate the advice. That's the point I was going to make. You are going to have a good amount of listeners. They're going to be listening to you, to your advice, how they can turn their ideas, their business ideas or professional ideas, or any idea for that matter, into a book. So with that said, I want to welcome you to the conversation. Let's get into it. Thank you.
Well, that's a lot of pressure, Robin, but I'll try to do my best.
I appreciate it. Before we get into the heart of the conversation, if you don't mind, as we say on this channel, everybody's got a story. And from reading about you, Henry, you have a very interesting one. So let me get you started with this. What is your story? What got you here?
What got me here is I flunked retirement. I was a dean at the University of California in San Diego and taught and was part of the administration. And I had a side hustle, ghostwriting books for people. And it started by word of mouth. And I started writing more and more books. And then finally, I went to the dean and said, I love our work here. I love the university, but I love these people who want to get a book out there even more. So I'm going to spend the rest of my life helping them be successfully published with books that they're proud of.
So I know you started, Henry, your as a writer at an AP sports writer, right? Is that did I get that right? Did I get the research correctly?
That's correct. The Associated Press, and covered baseball, football, basketball, not hockey, Robin. You know that we didn't have Major League Hockey.
My Canadian folks are going to be a little tiny pissed off now, but that's okay. We can handle that.
Yeah, but I would drive to LA and go see the Kings.
Oh, that's good.
We had an expat Canadian who was playing for us, number 99.
That's right. Wayne Gretzky.
There was some Canadian content for you.
That's right. I appreciate it. Thank you. You got me off the hook, Henry. I really appreciate it. So how do you go from covering baseball and, living the North American sort of sports ethos, if you will, or ecosystem, to a person who's doing ghostwriting for business books? Is there a connection? Sure. Is there a transition?
Well, I was covering the San Diego Padres, and the big PR agency in San Diego landed the Padres account, but they didn't have anybody on the team who knew baseball. And I was working during the day at the public relations office for the University of California, San Diego, where I graduated from. And then nights and weekends, I was covering, you know, baseball and other sorts for the AP. So the four magic words in the English language are, I know a guy. So they asked around, they said, who knows PR and who knows baseball? And they say, I know a guy, Henry DeVries. And then I went from covering the Padres to being a marketing consultant to the Padres. I helped them write their first marketing plan. I was meeting with everybody. I said, okay, who's the competition? And they said, well, the Dodgers are always tough, but the Giants look good and you can't. I said, no. I mean, the competition is movies, restaurants, the beaches. We're really competing for entertainment dollars. So helped them with that. And then went to another agency. And when the Super Bowl came to San Diego, I landed the Super Bowl account and worked in different sports. So I always had some kind of sports going on. But I was also attracted to business. So became a ghostwriter for CEOs. They have not only the president of the Padres, but other presidents of different corporations. I would write articles and eventually books for them. So I've always had that dual love. Sports is always in there, but also business.
You know, for the audience as well, I mean, I'm going to take you, Henry, through the memory lane here, a little bit down memory lane a little bit. You staged Ray Kroc's 80th birthday for Coca-Cola. 60,000 people showed up, and he gave you a copy of his book. What did that teach you?
Well, Ray Kroc, you know, the creator of McDonald's, didn't have 6 hours to spend with me to explain the culture of the organization, but he handed me his book, Grinding It Out, and I read that, and that really helped with my work. And that 80th birthday party for him, Coca-Cola came to me and said, we want to honor Ray on his 80th birthday, so we'd like you to do some special event for him. And you have a blank check. And I said, a blank check? What do you mean by that? And they said, Henry, the reason Coke outsells Pepsi is McDonald's. Ray Kroc refuses to let Pepsi into McDonald's. And it's those fountain sales that put us on top. So that's what we mean by a blank check. So, yeah, it was a great time.
And, you know, to be able to have that kind of interconnectivity with this level of business leaders out there, it must have been you know, for people who are listening to this, you know, they probably dream about having these types of connections. Right time, right place, Henry? Is that how it worked?
A lot of it, yeah. But it's funny because with friends, sometimes I don't like to talk about my career because I don't want to be like a name dropper. And someone said, okay, like, do you know the Queen of England? And I said, well, yes, she's a lovely woman. You know, she came to San Diego and I handled the media. They said, how about the Dalai Lama? I said, His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, the 14th Dalai Lama of Tibet, nice man. Now, I didn't hug him. He went up and hugged me. So yeah, I do have a lot of people I've connected to. I'm not special, but having a job as a writer and as a journalist, you have the opportunity to meet a lot of...
Yeah. So, and then you founded Indie Books International in 2014.
Yes.
Obviously, you saw a problem you're trying to solve or a business opportunity. And, you know, one question here I have is if you can take us back as to why you started the company or you started the agency, and also why did an independent consultant need a model different from traditional publishing in this stage?
Okay. Very insightful question. So the problem that I saw was consultants were frustrated. They were worried, they're concerned. I interviewed over 1,000 of them. They thought they were a well-kept secret. I saw you stop being the best-kept secret. They felt that way. They felt they lacked a proactive system to get clients. They sort of, I don't know, they network and met people and prayed the phone would ring. And I said, there is a proactive way to do this. I've cracked the code and I can teach you how to do it. So really the company I formed, it was half publishing, half training. We train people how to be an authority that attracts people to them. And publishing is one way. We always say that a book is the number one marketing tool. Speaking about the book, talking about the book, is the number one business development strategy for a consultant, for an advertising agency owner, anybody who's in the business of selling their expertise.
Now, I agree with you. You know, many of us out there think the book or the business book that somebody is creating, a CEO or professional of sort, it's almost like a marketing tool, that's fine, but sometimes people use it as a business card. You know, I've written a book, here it is, go download it on Amazon or whatever. But for those who are interested in more than that, in actually selling the book and making the book a business, is there a possibility for that? What's your advice? Have you experienced this before?
Very much so. the people who follow the system we developed, if they're in the business of expertise, and I can outline the system pretty quickly. One is you identify a target audience, a target rich audience. And it might be there's 2,000 to 10,000 of them in North America, this type of business. And then you research what are their biggest problems that you know how to solve. And then you generously share advice on how to solve that problem in general. And the more people you share it with in general, the more will hire you for the specifics to specifically apply it to their situation.
And so it's a user manual, right, Henry? You're creating a user manual in this case?
Explain the user manual to me.
So you by the book, I'm guessing the know-how that you are putting together in a book, that know-how becomes sort of a recipe, user manual, whatever you want to call it.
Sure. And yes, that's what it is. And then, but they pay you for the specifics. I had one client and their book was a, you know, international bestseller, and you could buy the book for $25, but companies like Merck were hiring them for $5,000. And I said, do you ever wonder why Merck pays you $5,000 for the advice that you gave them in the $25 book? And they said, yes, that's why we hired you to help us with that. And I said, well, they want you to specifically apply it to their situation so they don't make a mistake. Learning by trial and error is a very expensive learning process. So these companies rather hedge their bets, lower their risk by hiring you, get your best thinking applied to their situation. And people who do that and follow our system get a return on investment of 4x to 20x. So I have people who've credited me many in writing and on video that I've helped them make an extra $1 million with this book authority power system that we teach and preach.
Now, I love the word teaching because most people come to this exercise as foreigners, if I can say that, or as brand new to the exercise. It's not like they do book writing for a living. They have other things that they're working on or they'll be busy with. So I'm assuming there'll be like some sort of a, I want to say perspective correction on your side with your target audience, with your prospects. You know, they come in with these, do you shape the idea or how does that work?
Absolutely. I always tell them the German proverb that it doesn't matter how fast you're going if you're going down the wrong road. Actually, it does because you're getting farther away from where you need to be. So I always say we need to have a strategy, a book blueprint before we start, and also a blueprint on how you're going to publish it, how you're going to promote it, how you're going to leverage it to attract clients. We start with that end in mind and we build the book backwards.
Now, Henry, we live in a world, I think, and you can agree to that, where authenticity is rare nowadays. And, you know, I'm so proud of this a conversation that we're having right now on this channel, because we recognize top five authentic conversation podcasts around the world because the conversation is authentic. We're talking to real people. We're not promoting anything. We're just making sure that we're having conversation with people such as yourself. So authenticity is a rare commodity, I call it nowadays. With the age of AI and creating things automatically and people pushing content that we don't know if it's accurate, not accurate, etc. Where does the book actually lend, the idea of a book, does it help the individual look more authentic, more human, more down to earth? Does it send a signal out there that otherwise you will not be able to do that?
Well, not all books are created equal, Robin. And there's a hill I will die on, and that hill is I don't let authors do just boring, tell you how to do something, how to, in a book. And recently, one of my editors at Forbes, I do ghostwriting for CEOs for Forbes, and the editor said, you know, you'll never be replaced with AI. And I said, how is that? They said, well, AI doesn't know how to mine a story like you do and package it so people understand and get a lesson from it. And that's what we do with our authors. We say human brains are hardwired for stories. Also, stories reach the emotional decision part of the brain. So we just can't bore them into liking us, wanting us with lots of facts and figures. And you haven't even gone down the road, but I'll start with AI. People say, oh, won't AI replace you? And I go, oh, no, AI is the greatest thing in the world because it's producing all this AI slop. And people can tell the difference between a well-written, well-constructed, well-told book versus the what AI slop can do. I like to say AI is like your drunk uncle. Sometimes some great advice, but sometimes they hallucinate.
Yeah, I'm going to coin that phrase for you. Drunk uncle AI. I love that because you're right. You're absolutely correct. Sometimes it spits out a few things that they're correct. Sometimes it's just hallucinate. And it depends on how much alcohol was in the system at the time. For those out there who are working in an industry that is competitive, and it's hard nowadays to look at any industry that is not competitive. Everybody's competing with everybody. Does the book help the dynamic of that competitiveness a little bit better, position better? Does it help in that situation?
Well, absolutely, because there is esteem, there is respect for an author. And the reason all those people you've talked to who want a book don't have a book, because it is not easy to do a good book.
I'm one of them, by the way.
Yeah, it takes some time. And people, that's a separating run. Why it works so much when they have it from a impact and influence standpoint is you get two potential guests, both sound interesting. And one is the author of a book, and here's what their book is about. And here's their point of view and their stand. And the other says, I've been successful for years. Would love to talk to you. I mean, naturally, you're going to gravitate to the author. And as a person in charge of public programs for a major university, we booked authors. And by the way, the Dalai Lama, who I booked, is an author, has written many books and takes a stand. So what is it about you? What are you willing to take a stand on? The world does not need, pardon my language, the world does not need another crappy business book. The world needs a book that helps a specific group of people solve a specific problem and tells them stories so that they can remember the lessons. Because we forget in 30 days just general how-to information, but we remember the stories.
And you started the conversation, which is absolutely correct, Henry, by saying target audience. Who are your target audience? And once you select your target audience, then you can crystallize the idea of what you want to say to those. The last thing I think, and I 100% agree with you, is what you want to do is create a book that doesn't stand for anything with the idea to say, oh, I want to satisfy everybody. I don't know if you're going to be able to satisfy everybody with any idea nowadays. You got to take a stand, and I really appreciate where you're coming from, because I see a lot of ideas out there. They're sort of gray. I call them gray because they apply to everything. I mean, you don't know if it's what they're trying to say, what angle they're trying to push. I think, and they flip on the angle several times. It's just confusing.
And when we go out to get endorsements for books, and sometimes we've had big names read a book and say, I can't endorse this because of what you're advocating. And the author said, I think they're right. I said, well, you should have gotten that feedback when you were writing the book, not after it's being ready to be published. Then you got to move on to the next book. But not everybody's going to agree with you. The best thing I've ever written is my Warren Buffett book, How to Close a Deal Like Warren Buffett. And I got many 5-star reviews. But I got ones. I got people who hate this book and hate me. This book helped me get a paid writing position with Forbes. And somebody said, well, it looks like they'll let any Tom, Dick, or Henry write for Forbes these days. And I go like, I said to my co-author, I said, did he just call us a dick? And he goes, oh, yeah, he definitely called us a dick. But that's okay. In the forum of ideas, be bold with an idea. It's more important now with all the AI slop that you don't try to win by giving so much content away. You're just drowning them in content. They want analysis. They want a point of view, and not everybody's going to agree with you, and that's okay. But those who are agreeing with you are going to be more intensely interested in you and what you're about.
So let's move a little bit on to, because there's this idea that I've heard before, and I'm you know, and I saw that you also support, is marketing the book and marketing with a speech. So you got marketing, a book, and a speech. Why does speech matter so much to book?
Well, I did a 10-year, $3 million study of all of this. And what came out clear, one of the findings was, while writing is important, you're going to influence more people who listen to what you have to say or to what others have to say. That's why your podcast is so important. By the way, Robin, I wouldn't call you a thought leader. I would call you something higher. You're a thought follower. You bring these people on with interesting thoughts. You pull them out. You shine a spotlight on those thoughts. And that's what makes your podcast attractive, because of these ideas you're curating for people. So it's the same thing. You need to put on your own events and talk about your book. You need to do your own podcast or TV shows about what you do. You need to get on other people's and spread the word and get on other people's stages. More people will be impacted by what you say about the book than what you wrote in the book, and that's okay.
Now, I thank you so much for the shining the light on the thought leaders. This is what I started to do 3 years ago when I started the podcast, exactly right. You know, 250 executives later almost, I feel like we're doing a great job by bringing these people from, adding another light. It's not like I'm the only podcaster out there. There's 250,000 of them, but add another light onto the those thought leaders that are out there. And I really, that's my objective, really. That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm helping.
If I can pay you a compliment without being the person who tells everybody how the magician does the trick, the compliment is you do research, you do homework, you really prepare, you think about this, and you think about, who these listeners are and what's going to help them and what's going to bring it out. That's a noble profession. You're in a very noble profession.
I really appreciate it, Henry. I really appreciate the compliment, and I'm so happy to have you with me here, because this is one of the topics that it's coming to light right now, because for many reasons. One is, I'm talking about the book writing. One is we're going through economic turmoils across the globe. The sales profession right now is going through a huge transformation. Startups, small to medium businesses, even large organization, they're scratching their head thinking like, what's next? How do I go to the next level in my business cycle? And, I just had a conversation earlier with a company out of Israel. We're going to be posting that episode shortly, where we're talking about most of the sales force, business to business sales force disappearing in the next 10 years. There'll be more human to human interaction. And this go back to the book. That authenticity that the book's going to bring out, that thought leader that you're going to, the thoughts or the ideas that you're going to put out there with the book, I think it's going to add to that authenticity and get away from bot to bot conversation. The sales bot versus the agency bot or the company bot that's fighting to protect the bot. You know, it's like I'm thinking Android to Android conversations right now, but authenticity is missing.
Sure, and the agents. The agents are going to comb the websites, and you paid me a compliment. You said I'm easy to find, what I think, on the internet, because I share so much. Well, that's important, because when they're looking and they're scouring, then you make a short list. It's not about prospecting, and certainly not about cold call prospecting. It's putting yourself in a position to be found on their journey, and then delivering information to them at that point. And as you said, in an authentic manner, sometimes I ask people who are contacting me, I said, are you a robot? The best answer I heard was, well, how would I know if I was a robot? And I said, good point. asking that question proves you're human.
Okay. That's right. Now, you've identified 9 ways a busy professional can write a business book, none of which starting from a blank page, because everybody has been advising everybody all along since humanity began. You want to write something, you start with a blank page. So for you, what is the biggest myth that right now that you see in business book and how it actually gets written? Like, what do you like to demystify out there?
Well, the biggest myth is that they should do it with rugged individualism. Sometimes I call it the misery approach, that they should lock themselves up in a cottage up in Northern Ontario, or for us, it might be a cabin in the Rockies, and don't come out to the book stud. So I named that after the Stephen King novel and movie, the misery approach. So really, it's a team sport. Get somebody who could be a co-collaborator, a co-writer, or in my case, I'm a developmental editor where I interview people like a business journalist. I transcribe it. I organize for it for them and said, here's your draft of your book. And now, you know, polish that draft. So that's what's important is know it's a team sport and get some help doing it.
So I've talked to, and I'm just curious, that's all on this one, because I've talked to a lot of people who've written books. And as soon as they write the book, they are a New York Times bestseller. Is that real? Like, how do you become a New York? Is over time, and I'm looking at the book and I'm thinking, like, maybe I don't know what's wrong. I'm just doubting that.
Well, I'll try to break it down simple. So for Warren Buffett, the Warren Buffett book, this was McGraw-Hill, so a major New York publisher. A New York Times bestseller, the New York Times has about like 2,000 bookstores that they monitor sales at. So you have to have a big publisher who can get your book into those bookstores. And but at the end of the day, we said it would have been a $100,000 investment to make this a New York Times bestseller, or a $20,000 investment to make it an Amazon.com bestseller. And we went with Amazon. And by the way, who sells more books, Amazon or those 2,000 bookstores? So in raw sales, this was also the right way to go. But it's an investment that you've got to promote. Books don't get discovered. You know, it's like that, the myth of the Hollywood young woman who goes to Hollywood and goes to the drugstore or the soda shop and gets discovered and put in the movies. You know, that's all. This is all myth. So same thing with books. They don't get discovered. They get marketed. They get promoted. And you need a plan to do that. So when my Warren Buffett book came out, on the day it was released, 1 million emails went out from other people, not from me, saying, this is a good book. You should buy it. And if you do, you'll get some extra gifts and other things and collaboration on that. Now, that was an orchestrated campaign that took 6 months to line up. And there was some horse trading and some other things going on for that to come out. So there were people, Robin, who were gaming the system, who you know, were finding out who are the 2,000 bookstores and hiring people that would go out and buy books at those bookstores and all that. It was uncovered, a big expose in the Wall Street Journal about the black arts behind books. So the solid thing that you really need to do to promote a book is to do campaigns with people who are interested. And we usually offer our books. I'm a book publisher, so I've published 200 books. The first week a book comes out, I'll put it for sale for 99 cents on Kindle for the ebook, with the request that if you buy the book at 99 cents, leave an honest review, because it's the number of reviews that you get that matter to people more than like, matter of fact, I'm a little suspect when I see, oh, it got 10 reviews and they were all a 5. Everybody loved that book and they loved it as a 5? No, that was, you know, the fix is in. You want to see that it has a lot of people reviewing it and high marks. I hope I didn't get too detailed on you.
No, that's fine. I'm glad I'm not the only one who reads these reviews and sort of question marks everything, but I don't know why my suspicion, I'm all suspicious of these behaviors out there. I have no idea.
Yeah. But you know, humans have great built-in BS detectors. And like you said, if you got suspicious, you probably got suspicious for a reason.
Yeah.
And people can sort that out. You know, the legit versus, this looks a little too orchestrated to me.
Yeah. What are your 9 methods, Henry, is podcasts to book? I host, you know, I mean, I've this is my, I think, 244 this episode here. The reason I say to, I think, is because I lose count after recording so many per day. So is that archive already a book, do you think, waiting to be assembled? Or what is the trap? Is there a trap in this?
Yeah. So you that's, know, that's a hidden project. Asset. Those podcasts, those transcripts are hidden assets. I helped a woman named Jody Katz. She has a very successful public relations advertising agency in New York City. Her target rich environment is the beauty industry. And she did a podcast called Brains and Beauty. And it wasn't to promote her. It was a thought follower. She got every executive in that field she could get on the show. But she asked them, so what did you want to be when you were growing up? What was that dream? And how did that, and how did you wind up doing this now? What was that journey? Then she came to me and she says, it's 5 years. It's an award-winning show. Do we have something here? We went through and I said, we definitely have some great stories here. And we named the book The Seduction of Success, because that was a theme that was coming out through a lot of these very successful people. And some of that seduction was they didn't know what they were going to have to give up to be the success that they wanted to be. There's a price. And sometimes it's balance, sometimes other things that you give up. So the point of the book was know what you're getting into. And that's really helped the show. You know, the book and the podcast have synergy. And that's what you want with everything that you do.
Henry, also you say writing is a team sport. I thought writing is an author's responsibility, but from what you're explaining to us today, you need a little bit of help around you, similar to what you, services that you're offering. What does that look actually look like?
Sure. So I will quote a famous author, Lily Tomlin, who said, "We're all in this alone." So at the end of the day, you are the author. You are, you know, you're responsible. But what I mean by team sport is getting feedback. So I'd like to offer your guests $365. So what that means is I teach a course online about 8 times a year. I take a handful of would-be authors and I help them come up with answers to 7 questions you need to answer before you write a book or promote a book. And if anybody mentions your name, Robin, with an email to me, I don't have any code or anything like that. They have to mention your name.
That's right. We'll put that up there.
But other things are a developmental editor is somebody who works with an author to co-create. They're not the editor who makes sure your spelling and grammar are correct. This is the one that says, well, this is working. This isn't working. Or we need a story here. Or we need a chapter here that explains this. So that's what I mean by a team sport. And you know, get somebody to help you.
And is Henry the overall idea, like the marketability of the idea, like some people can come up with book ideas that probably you can sell a million of it. And sometimes you come up with an idea, you're probably going to sell it to what, your friends and family. Is there a discussion around the marketability of the idea?
There is with me. So a man named Mike, who's an executive in the Silicon Valley, found 5 of my authors and interviewed them and then called me and said, I've interviewed 5 of your authors. I want to hire you to help me write my book. And I said, well, that's interesting. What did they say? And he said, they all said the same thing. And I said, what's that? They all said, you are honest. Well, Robin, I was kind of like my chest puffed out a little and I go, honest, what? That's a great reputation. He goes, yeah, Mike said, one of them said, he told you his idea for the book and you told him, well, nobody's going to buy that book. And I said, yeah, sometimes brutal honesty. I'm working on the brutal part, but my job is to give you feedback. And I don't even like to use the word feedback, but to tell you this is working and this isn't working. And here's how we could get it to work. You need that when doing a book and on the marketability. And I make sure people are in alignment with their goals and their book. So that book will serve their goals that they tell me they have. Sometimes people want to just, they think writing a book about anything like fly fishing is going to help them support their a law business. You know, no, it doesn't work that way. It needs to be a book that solves a problem for a specific group of people.
Now, for those of whom, you know, from our listeners listening out there right now to our conversation here and enjoying this conversation, they're thinking probably in the back of their mind, ghostwriting, you know, ghostwriting feels to some people, not everybody, a bit dishonest in, you know, I'm not the actual writer, but you already addressed that, I think, by saying, look, you're in control. There is a ghostwriter that's helping guiding this, but can you just put it to bed, put it to rest?
But don't downplay it. Don't whitewash it. Bring it right out, Robin. Some people say this is dishonest.
Yeah.
Let's go after that.
That's right.
Had a home builder CEO who I was ghostwriting for, and his name, we'll call him Bill. So Bill said, Henry, I don't know if this is right. I said, what do you mean, Bill? He goes like, well, my name is on it, but you did all the heavy lifting on writing this. I said, yeah, well, let me ask you a question. How many homes are you going to build this year? He said, 1,000. I said, wow, Bill, your arms are sure going to get tired with all that hammering and painting. And he said, don't be silly. You know that I'm going to cause 1,000 homes to be built. I said, just like you're causing this book to be written. I'm just a tool that you're using. And I interview you. I pull out your thoughts. And my job is anybody who reads this book feels like they were talking to Bill. That's when I've done my job the right way. Now, certain professions, if it's a textbook, like in medicine or something like that, no, not a ghostwriter. Though I have been a ghostwriter for doctors, but they're on books more like the philosophy of weight loss.
Philosophy of weight loss.
Well, this person, he ran a very successful clinic. He had done all this research, and he wanted a book that anybody could access. You didn't have to be this scientist reading, you know, that how would they understand what all the research that was coming through their university was revealing about weight loss. And it's more than, I'll give you a plot spoiler. It's not just eat less and exercise more. A lot more going on with anybody who's struggled to take off a few pounds will attest to. And that's what his book was about. Other times I've helped dentists or surgeons, but they're talking about the business of being a dentist or a surgeon. So that's where a ghostwriter would be appropriate. Be very inappropriate. I would not write a book on telling people how to do oral surgery.
That's right.
It's not my area.
That's right. Now, Henry, I read somewhere that you say, and I hope to God that I'm not getting it out of context here, that there are only 8 stories in the human that the human brain is wired for. And every great book uses maybe one of them. Walk me through the 8, if it's correct.
No, that is correct. There's only 8 stories. And this came from my research of a man named Christopher Booker, who chronicled this in literature. And then I applied it to business books and found out that the same 8 stories. And as a journalist, I said, we didn't name them, but we were following these 8 stories. So here they are. There's the monster problem story, that there's something that this is like life or death, usually for a business or a career. There's the underdog story, which is also known as the Cinderella story or the David versus Goliath story or the rags to riches story. It's about the little person overcoming, you know, the giant problem.
Adversity.
There's 2 solutions. One is called the comedy solution and the other is the tragedy solution. Comedy is solving a problem with a wacky idea. Richard Branson and the Virgin Companies, and you know, he's good at that. But then if you try to take a shortcut against the laws of society, nature, God, what you will, those always end badly, and those are cautionary tales. The next 4 are the mystery. It's a mystery. It's a riddle. It's a conundrum. You got to crack the code. The 6th one is the quest. It's about a journey, a search for a prize, an odyssey, if you will. How to close a deal like Warren Buffett is a quest book because that's what people want to do. And then the last 2, number 7 is the comeback, redemption, rebirth story. The Phoenix rising from the ashes, what was dead is now, you know, going well. So their story. And then there's the escape story. I also call it the escape from Crazy Town, where somebody's on the right track, everything's going well, and then they get off track, things go to Crazy Town, and then they find a way to get back on track. So those are the eight stories. I say those they should be, one of them is the overarching story for the book. But individual stories within the book should follow one of those eight formats. There is a ninth story I don't want anybody to use, and I call that the grandpa story. Well, we were taking the hogs to Cummingsville, and we went and got pie. Oh, they sure have good blueberry pie in Sacramento, but not as good as the apple pie your Aunt Marge made in New York. You know, she married a drunk, and he was like, where is that story going? So some people, you know, when they sit down at the typewriter with a blank sheet of paper or word processor, you know, computer, you know, they start just going wherever. What did somebody call it this week? They said word vomit. Sorry, Henry, I did a word vomit there. So those are the eight stories.
So for the, thank you for that. I appreciate it. And that's, thanks for the concise way of putting it, because a lot of times you hear a lot of principles out there in the way they should be putting books together or writing a book idea together, just to come up with the idea. Now you can put a book anyway, but to come up with an idea and make sure it fits those narratives or whatever you're trying to guide the readers to or the audience. It's very interesting how you concise it into eight types of stories, which is hopefully the audience here is listening and taking notes of that. Now, one of the category of our audience here on the channel are consultants and professional services, audience that listen to the channel. Which types of these stories do you think will work best for them? Is there a category better than others, or are they all together the same?
Sure. For a lot of them, I steer them toward a mystery because they have specialized knowledge, which is no big deal to them, but it's quite a revelation to the people they help. And so if they can do a mystery story where they're cracking the code or it's a riddle to people and they're solving the riddle, that's good. If the problem is so severe, it could be, you know, life or death, but then it's a monster story and they describe the monster problem. I had two people from the University of Toyota come to me and they taught it, Six Sigma work practices for knowledge workers. And they said, we want to do a book and it wants to be the new paradigms of the workforce vis-a-vis the Six Sigma. I said, okay, not that book. Nobody's going to buy that book. He said, well, what is it? And I said, well, tell me the problem here. He says, well, people spend an extra day a week answering emails that they wouldn't have to answer and they could repurpose that work. And I said, it's killing careers, it's killing companies. I said, we have a monster problem story there. And we talked about the tsunami of emails people were dealing with every week. And there's a Japanese word for waste, muda. And we nicknamed this this monster muda. And muda, you got to kill muda before muda kills you. So that's another type of story that you can tell.
Talk to me about the three character formula that you've talked about: hero, nemesis, and mentor. And what shocks most business people, that you're not supposed to be the hero in your own story. Can you elaborate a little bit on this one from a context perspective? And where do you think the best fit is for this particular one?
I've taught 50 workshops around the country for CEOs on persuading with a story. And they always get hung up on this one when I say there's three characters in the story, the hero, the nemesis, and the mentor, and you're not the hero. Oh, we did great things. I said, I know. You're the mentor character who taught the hero how to do the great things to get them past the nemesis. I said, if you tell it where you're the hero of the story and there's a nemesis, your client, who you're telling a story to influence future clients, what role do they have in the story? The damsel in distress, and nobody is going to identify with being the damsel in distress. So you need a story. And a real quick one, CEO of a company is about to go bankrupt, but his vision is one day he would own his own 55,000 square foot building. His Vistage, which is a CEO peer-to-peer group, his Vistage coach puts together a tiger team. That's the mentor character. He was blind to what was happening in his business. That's the nemesis. And they got him to find new revenues and cut expenses to get into the black. And eventually he crosses the finish line and owns a 55,000 square foot building. So that's how the three characters work. If it helps you remember, think of Star Wars. There's Luke Skywalker, there's Darth Vader, and there's Yoda. The more modern movies, they use the same three, only it's Rey, Kylo Ren, and Luke Skywalker, who looks like Yoda now. So that's the formula. Just think about that. And when you tell a story, that's what human brains are hardwired to hear and identify.
Now, I'm going to put you a little on the spot here. I am writing a memoir about growing up in the Lebanese civil war in the 70s and the 80s and escaping that civil war and coming to Canada and building my career. My suggested title of the book, people have heard me talk about it here on the channel quite often, and I'm one of those guys procrastinator, not because I want to, it's just because I'm too busy to sit down and actually write a book. I only written 25,000 words so far. Definitely needs a lot of editing. It's just me scribbling things on paper, I guess. And the question for me was, okay, so I love the idea from the that you said earlier, the Phoenix Rising kind of thing, and it sort of like resonated with me. And I've been thinking about this one. So when I started putting it together, I said, what do I name this thing? So I said, I'm going to title it, From the Ashes of Beirut to the Boardroom. And I'm telling like all the incidents that I still remember from being a kid. How did I dodge bullets? How did I dig a bunker with my own hands? How did I, survive multiple bombing raids and ended up in a hospital, two fractured ribs, and move to Canada or escape and run to Canada and build a life right after that. And gaining education, working, all that stuff under all these conditions. It's pretty interesting. So I think I would like your opinion, obviously. And what do you think of the idea, A, and which type of story do you think this will fit in?
Even before you said it, I thought that's a comeback, redemption, rebirth story. So, the first part of it is this struggle to get out. And then you reach Canada. And that is it's like act two is Canada and the growth from there. And like a good movie, it wasn't easy, Robin. It wasn't like you arrived in Canada and everything worked out. My father's story is something similar about, surviving the Nazis in World War II, being in the Dutch resistance and getting to come to America when the war was over. And then what happened from there on? So the compliment I have for you is, in my view, these are the most important stories that we tell. Life is hard and it's tough for people, and they need these stories to know that, you can come back, you can overcome, never give up, never surrender, as the Galaxy Quest movie said, and you can triumph in the end. My father on his deathbed said to me, why are you so down? Did you think I was going to get out of this alive? And he goes, I've had the most wonderful life. We've had the most wonderful time together. My mother made a joke on her deathbed too. And somebody said, are you telling me DeVries's make jokes on their deathbed? And I said, yeah, why would that be any different than any other day? That's who we are.
No, I appreciate your insight on this one and your advice. Now I'm more pushed now to pursue it and finish it off. Now, after we finish a book or after somebody publish a book, I'm thinking publishing here must be a starting line for another phase. Can you walk us what happened after you publish a book?
Yeah, we say publishing is the starting line, not the finish line. It's the marathon that starts. and consistency is what wins the race, like the Aesop fable of the tortoise and the hare. Slow and steady is going to win this race. And it's the author's job then to first, after they've published a book they're proud of, to share it with other people and get other people to love their book and to spread the news about that book. So on the basic, like minimum daily requirement, minimum monthly requirement, I should say, I want people doing 2 speeches or podcasts a month to a target rich audience. And I want them to send out 20 copies of their book a month to people who can book them on podcasts, book them for speeches, write about them, hire them, and spread that word. And that's the author's real job. Now, there's a lot of things that you can do too. And I have the Magnificent 7 things I teach on what to do. But the basic ones are tell the story, tell the story, tell the story as much as you can.
Henry, I'd be hard-pressed not to ask this question, but it feels to me these type of books have an expiry date to it. It sort of lives for a few months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, and then there is a need to either write another book or explore another idea, etc. What is your advice on this one? What is your theory, if there is one, on how long do you think a business book would live generally? And do we write for the purpose of the writing becomes a classical sort of a piece of literature that would live on, like, you know, your the famous authors in the world, Tolstoy, Rousseau, etc.?
My wife forbids me from using my name in the same sentence as those people or Charles Dickens. So I'll just skip over.
Okay.
So, yeah, John Steinbeck is also I'm on my no talk list. Okay. So I'll tell you what I preach and what I practice. So I'm up to 20 books. I come out with at least a new book every year. I say the philosophy here is you want to become the authority expert in a certain area, and authorities attract people to them. You can't spell the word authority without the word author. And an authority is not one and done with a book. They don't say everything they have to say in one book. They need to come out with new books and share that. So at the very least, I'm always telling people, next book, what's the next book? As you're promoting this book, what are you telling people is the next book going to be? Or if this is a series of books you're coming out with, then what's the next in the series? That is very attractive to people, that you have that kind of content and insights to share. So the other thing I tell people is, if your book was published before the pandemic, that book has expired. The expiration date's done on that book, because everyone knows that the world changed in those years. So we want to know, what is it in this post-pandemic world? So that's another reason you need to come out with a business book. Even every other year would be fine. So you're loving a book for a year and you're publishing a book for the next year.
Now, you helped a lot of authors convert their books into speaking engagement. Is that something you do, something your agency does, your company does, or do you help them, walk them through the process and you leave it up to them? Is there a method for this?
Thanks for asking. That's our secret sauce. That's what makes us different, is that my business partner is the past president of the National Speakers Association, and he has trained 1,000 consultants and professional speakers to make a living at this. Several of our authors are in the Speakers Hall of Fame. I'll be at the big National Speakers Association convention. One of my authors is getting inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. We're very proud of him. It's a secret. I can't tell you who. And then we've published another past president, the first female president of the National Speakers Association, probably a dozen chapter presidents of the National Speakers Association. We have published 3 world champions of public speaking from the Toastmasters professional ranks. So that is something that we have, and we call our 200 authors the Indie Books family. So we get the family together to foster. And it is always a playoff. not going to be in this alone as authors and experts. We're going to meet online. We're going to meet in person. We're going to do videos. We're going to share. We're going to cross promote. That's going to be the real advantage here. So those are some of the things that I recommend people thinking about, where don't be in it alone. Form communities and use communities to support others' work. And by the law of attraction or the law of reciprocity, or call it karma, call it kismet, call it what you will, you will get promoted also. I live in California, so out here when I speak, I have to say the universe rewards activity. When I'm out in the Midwest, I can say the Lord helps those who help themselves. And so you help yourself by helping others.
Now, for those customers or for those of your customers or the listeners for this channel, they're thinking maybe I can use the book for a client acquisition tool in a sales process. Is that possible?
Absolutely. So the number one thing you could do is when you're writing the book, interview prospects and ask them if it's okay to share the information in your newsletter or, you know, before the book comes out. And if you do a podcast, could they be on your podcast and interview them? And then you'll share information with them as it comes out. So you're already building community as you're writing the book. When the book comes out, it's also about building community. And as I said, I believe the four magic words in the English language are, I know a guy. So you want, and then, and I've talked to my female authors. They said, yeah, we're called guys too. It's like, you know, it's just, it's becoming a gender neutral term. So I know a guy, and that's what leads to the referral process. And it never hurts. They say, oh, and, you know, Robin's an author, Mary's an author, and happy, they'll be happy to share a copy of their book. So it becomes part of a lead generation proactive process when you put on your workshops or Zoominars online about the book. That's part of lead generation. The book is your line in the sand that tells people, here's what I believe and what I stand for. Other people are saying, trust me. And if you want people not to trust you, say, trust me. That's my advice.
That's right. Welcome to the van. Yeah. To the minivan.
Yes. Yeah. Welcome. I hear he has candy and a puppy dog.
That's right. Talk to us a little bit, if you don't mind, Henry, about the gifting strategy. How do you give a book to a prospect without making it feel like marketing or promotional stunt?
Well, one of my authors does such a good job on this is he buys other people's books and he regularly sends out books that he loves to other people. And not his, you know, yet. But then when his book came out, then it was natural that he also sent his book to people. One thing I do is I have PDF copies of all my books just loaded on my computer, because if there's somebody talking or something, I say, well, let me send you a gift copy of my book. It talks about that. And I can send them an email. Electrons are free, you know, and that goes and it's immediate. Now, some people I talk to, I know they'll say something like, oh, I never read anything on a device. I got to have a book in my hand. Well, I hop on Amazon and send them. I just send a gift copy on my Amazon Prime account so I don't pay shipping. These people get a, you know, a book, a real live book that they can touch in their hands, touch, smell, taste. I hope not. But those things that it's a real book. So those are all things you can do in gifting strategies. Also, chopping the content of that book up and using it on a LinkedIn newsletter. And every week you release something from your book. That's another gifting strategy. I went from zero to 2,500 opt-in subscribers on my LinkedIn newsletter in about a year by just giving away interesting content from my books every week.
This is very great strategy, and LinkedIn newsletter is a great strategy, but you've got to put interesting content in the newsletter. You can't be just sending you know, AI generated stuff for people that are probably not interested in that or no wisdom in something. You've got to put something new, something genuine.
Yeah. AI slop. I've done something that I systematically contact some of my successful authors. I asked them if I can record it. And I just asked them, you know, has the book been successful for you? You know, how do you measure that? And I had some amazing people. One person said, yeah, well, I made $1.3 million, but I don't think I sold 200 copies of the book, but I gave away 1,000 copies of the book. You know, every time I spoke, every time I went somewhere, you know, other people shared other, you know, stories of their success. That so that doesn't happen by accident. You're going to have to reach out to your clients and ask them what success looked like. And are they okay with you using their name to tell the story? Or they need, do they want you to disguise who they are? I go both ways, but I always prefer if someone says, yes, use my name. I had one, you know, they said, but they're on the condition where when in the story, you invited me out to dinner, tell them that I picked up the tab. I said, okay, if that's important. And then later in the story, I said, and the second time we went out to dinner, I picked up the tab, but no, I didn't take him to McDonald's. I took him to the same steakhouse he took me to. So you can have fun with it too.
Totally. Now for our localization industry, the language industry that listens to this channel quite avidly, can the process of writing a book in English be replicated in other languages? And have you dabbled in other languages than English?
Yes. We start in English. And then we get a translator, and whether it's going into Spanish or Chinese or whatever, we have to have somebody who can read it over and make sure that it's the right way. Now, English is, you know, the lingua franca, it's the language of the world, and of course that'll take you so far. But I do believe in translations for specific groups. It just shows you care. That's what I think the biggest thing is.
Yes, you started the conversation, Henry, by saying, you know, target the audience. And if the audience are in this specific topic or the specific, you know, book that you're trying to achieve here are largely non-English speakers, maybe that's part of the starting point. Is that it?
Well, yeah, because you're not really solving their problem if they can't understand what you're really saying.
Correct. Correct. Now, what is, you know, I'm just cognizant of the time
book,
here.
My Warren Buffett book
yeah.
is in 5 languages, including Chinese. Now, I hear I'm better in Chinese than I am in English, but I wouldn't know.
How is your Chinese? No?
Not that's so good. There I am.
Excellent. Henry, what is the one business book that you would recommend for business leaders to read before coming to you for help?
Sure. And if they want one of my books, I'll send it to them for free, as I'd said. And, you know, my Defining You or Client Attraction Chain Reaction or Marketing with a Book, Persuade with a Story, those would all be a good starter point for me. If they want to get into professional speaking, I recommend a book by Judy Carter, which is The Message of You. I don't make any money if they buy this, but this is the best book I've read about how to be a professional speaker who makes 7,500 to 15,000 speaking. And we've had our authors apply her, and I stalked her basically and published her book, The New Comedy Bible, because I was such a fan.
Excellent recommendation. This is great.
Yeah. So there's also a book called The Business of Expertise by David Baker. I recommend that book for, you said, professional service firms and consultants and all that. I really like what David has to say. I have followed him and written about him for 20 years. That would be a book for them.
Now, as I'm cognizant of the time here, I took more than an hour of your time. I really appreciate it with hanging in here with me with as we wrap this up. Henry, where can people find out more about what you do, the audience here, connect with you, reach out? How do they find you?
Sure. They can go to my website, INDIE, books, INTL.com. That's the initials for international. And we have an events page, and we do different events. Some are no cost, some are, you know, for a fee. I do a writer's retreat for 2 days in Chicago a couple times a year. And, you know, I will work with you for 2 days and you'll leave with 20 to 30,000 words of a book in that amount of time.
You have something called, is that yours? Did I get that right? Book chat strategy? Do you do that?
Well, yeah, my book chat strategy is anybody who is serious about doing a book can go online and just ask, and they can have 30-minute strategy call with me. No selling zone, but we're just going to talk about it and share information and help them get clarity around their goals and the assets they have to get a book done.
You know, for the audience, you know, this was very interesting to me, to be honest with you. You know, an hour and 10 minutes of recording here, and I feel like I can talk to Henry another hour probably, and we're probably scratching the top of the tip of the iceberg or the surface on this conversation. There's a lot more ideas that we can dig deeper into it and maybe spend a little bit of an hour on each one of those angles. But for now, we're going to leave it as it is, and we're going to leave it where it is, and we're going to wrap it up. Did I cover everything you wanted to cover for the audience? Is there any other messages, comments you want to share?
Thank you for asking. If I would leave people with one message, it would be this. Your story matters. Your story is what's going to make, and your stories are what's going to make your book unique. It's going to stand out. People tell me, everybody has a book. Well, no, not everybody, but there are 40 million books for sale on Amazon, but there's no book like yours out there.
They don't have your book.
Yeah, your book, your story. Your story matters.
That's right. So I want to thank you, Henry, very much for joining me today. Really appreciate your time.
Robin, as they say at Chick-fil-A, my pleasure.
Thank you so much. For the audience, I want to thank you so much for joining us on this conversation with Henry DeVries. And I want to also thank you for watching us on YouTube, listening to us on the podcast, and checking out our blog post, where I keep a summary of all these conversations in an archivable format, robinayoub.blog. Feel free to check it out. You can research on previous guests, etc. And if you haven't done so, you can download our mobile app now. It's at app.l10 and firesidechat.com, where you can download the app, put it on your mobile, and take us with you everywhere you go. You can listen to the audio, watch the videos, and read the blog post on the app as well. So I want to thank you all, and thanks for joining us on this journey of this conversation, and I will see you at the next episode. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.